And welcome to Midday, everybody, on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us this afternoon. 40 years ago, Baltimore was a major manufacturing center. One-third of the city's workforce was employed in factories, both large and small. Today, just 5% of Charm City's workforce earns a living making things. That decline has played out in cities across the country. U.S. manufacturing employment peaked in 1979, and it's been declining ever since, down to just 9% of the national workforce today. Baltimore's manufacturing base has suffered, just like everywhere else in the nation, the victim of cheap labor overseas, surging imports, and a changing business climate. So today, we're going to look at the evolving state of manufacturing in Baltimore through the lens of three innovators who've been working in various ways to change the landscape for small business manufacturing and artisan craft work, such as textiles and furniture making. Will Holman is the general manager of Openworks, the $11.5 million makers space that opened in September and in the Station North Arts and Entertainment District over near Greenmount Cemetery. He's an architect by training and also a furniture maker. Andy Cook is the founder of the Made in Baltimore campaign, a project of the Baltimore City Planning Department's Office of Sustainability. Made in Baltimore is partnering with the Urban Manufacturing Alliance on a study to assess the state of urban manufacturing across the country, and Baltimore will serve as one of the case study cities. Rashid Aziz is here as well. 6 years ago, he started the Citywide Youth Entrepreneurship Program to work with teens in Baltimore's most distressed neighborhoods. It's good to have all of you guys here. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
So, Will Holman, let's start with you. Openworks just opened with great fanfare, and deservedly so. It's a beautiful building, a beautiful spot, and a big building. I mean, you got, what, 30-something thousand square feet over there? Tell us what Openworks is all about and who's using it and what you're doing.
So Openworks' mission is to make tools, technology, and the knowledge to use them accessible to all. And we do this in three ways. One is membership access to tools. We have three levels of membership plus scholarship options for folks that can't afford that. We have classes for young people, for adults, and eventually for workforce development. That's something we're working on. And then we have affordable studio space that are kind of smaller starter cubicles for people just getting on their feet.
So folks join Openworks. They pay a little monthly fee or something like a rent, and they have access to all these tools and all this stuff you got over there. I mean, everything from like 3D printing to lathes and stuff. What are the kinds of stuff that people have access to work with?
So we have seven different workshops and a full computer lab. The seven workshops include space for electronics, for textiles, for 3D printing, for graphic design, digital media, digital fabrication, metalwork, and woodworking.
So if you're like a freelance artisan builder of stuff, you don't have to have your own shop, right? You don't have to buy a lathe or buy a 3D printer.
Right.
You can join Openworks and use it whenever you need to.
Just to use my own experience as a lens to look at it, you know, I'm a woodworker and a furniture designer. And to outfit a basic wood shop, even with used tools, you need $5,000 or $10,000 worth of equipment. Then you need a space to put it in. You need to pay rent. You need insurance. And here we're offering turnkey access with expert staff to all that equipment for a low monthly fee. And hopefully people will scale out of our space and kind of go on to be their own successful enterprise in their own space eventually.
And open 24/7?
Not yet. We're started with more limited hours, 9 to 9 on the weekdays and 9 to 5 on the weekends, but we'll grow and expand as our membership does.
But it's still a good window. I mean, you could work when you need to work.
A lot of time.
Yeah. And Rashid, tell us about your program, the Citywide Youth Entrepreneurship Program. You're working with kids. You're working with young people, not, older professionals, right?
Well, not quite kids. Primarily 18. One of our programs works from 16 to 24. Mm-hmm. Our program, Citywide Youth Development, focuses on three things: entrepreneurship education, vocational skill training, and enterprise development. And from that focus, we created two programs, one, Frozen Desert Sorbet, which we do work with young teenagers, primarily 15 to 21. The operator mobile cart throughout the spring and summer.
At Lexington Market, right?
Well, yeah, we have actually one of the only youth operated enterprise in Lexington Market. It's a cafe, sorbet cafe. During the summer, the young people actually sell the sorbet through mobile carts. Our other program is a clothing and textiles initiative where we introduce older young adults in Baltimore City, 18 to 24, to manufacturing screen printing, embroidery, garments, and other textiles.
And how did you get involved in this? Are you a business owner, manufacturer yourself? What's your background?
Yeah, that's my background. But I've, you know, always been a social entrepreneur. I've been working in the community from a very young age as far as looking for solutions to end violence and poverty. So our strategy became, since we want to end violence and poverty, let's take it from an economic perspective and change the economic means as a strategy to end the violence and poverty. So that's how we got into clothing and textiles and food, because everyone loves to eat.
Everybody loves to eat. And I got to make sure I have it right. It's frozen deserts, not desserts. It's sorbet, desert. But it's
yes.
Desert.
Uh-huh. It's desert.
There you go. And the vocational training, there are a number of different vocational training programs around town. How do you focus yours?
Well, ours is a little different. The program actually is called IMAGE. It's a little weird. It's spelled E-M-A-G-E. And the IMAGE is an acronym for Entrepreneurs Making and Growing Enterprises. And so we actually have an IMAGE center that's under construction. It's about 10,000 square feet. It'll be opening, and it's on, located on North Avenue in what we call the hot zone, or ground zero during the rioting situation. In that IMAGE center, it's a vocational skill training for clothing and textiles. It's a partnership between Sagamore Ventures, BCCC, our organization.
Sagamore is the development arm of Under Armour.
Yes.
Okay, so they're involved.
Uh-huh.
And
BCCC, our
that's
organization.
That's the Baltimore Community.
Baltimore City Community College.
Right.
And the department, Baltimore City Department of Social Services. We're bringing in 30 young adults. They're going to attend BCCC for 1 year. They're going to train there, train with us in fashion design and industrial apparel manufacturing. They're going to get a certificate, and also job placement opportunities are available. So we're going to house that program on North Avenue, and it's about 30 to 35 participants are going to be in the first cohort.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Andy, you have this initiative called the Made in Baltimore campaign, and you're going to collaborate with a national organization called the Urban Manufacturing Alliance that's going to study 13 different cities, right, including Baltimore.
Correct.
What are you trying to learn? What are you going to study?
Well, we're really trying to get an idea of what the maker and small manufacturing sector looks like in Baltimore City. There have been studies on manufacturing in the past, but that tends not to capture the makers and the smaller companies that Made in Baltimore has so far worked with. And we're trying to place makers sort of on a continuum or a spectrum of businesses that sort of, you know, begins with the single person like knitting sweaters at home and grows all the way up into the factory that's employing, you know, 500 to 1,000 people. We think that there's kind of a disconnect between people that identify themselves as manufacturers and makers. And hopefully out of this study, we're going to create some information that shows how those companies, how a small company like that becomes a larger manufacturer.
So Donald Rumsfeld famously said one time, you know, we know what we know, we don't know what we don't know, and to a certain extent, we know what we don't know. So let me ask you the third of that, those philosophical queries. What do you need to know that you think we don't know, and what will this study be able to tell you?
It's going to tell us, first of all, it's really an economic impact study. So we're trying to identify just what the impact of these smaller companies are on the city, how many jobs there are, you know, what these companies are making in revenue, how much real estate they're using, taxes being paid, those sorts of things. It's going to be a baseline understanding from which Made in Baltimore is kind of going to judge the progress of this sector and honestly the progress of our campaign. You know, our aim is to grow the number of jobs in making and small manufacturing in the city, as well as the sort of gross revenue of products, locally made products being sold both in and outside of the city. Mm-hmm. And we really can't tell if we're, you know, doing that if we don't know where we start at.
So Rashid, I'm interested, did you pick fashion design and manufacturing because there's an active fashion manufacturing sector here in Baltimore, and so the kids that you're training, the young people you're training, will be able to go into that sector? Or are you trying to create a fashion manufacturing sector in town?
Well, quite honestly, Baltimore has a deep history of being a textile manufacturing industry, primarily because of the port, the close proximity to D.C., Philly, New York. So the market actually is bigger than Baltimore. Baltimore is, you know, in a key position because you have easy access to those markets. So I'm not really recreating an industry that didn't exist. The industry always existed, but we're kind of rejuvenating, you know, those opportunities. And I think with Under Armour, you know, building City Garage, and these other maker spaces that are coming.
That's the thing that's already up and running South Baltimore, where Port Covington's going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and Under Armour has made a garment or two in their lives, haven't they?
yeah, I think quite a few. So I think, you know, the if you look at it, the whole movement of manufacturing, especially in textiles, is kind of being rejuvenated here in Baltimore City. And in the urban community, you know, we're kind of being a part of that wave.
And Will Holman, it's no accident that OpenWorks is located in the Station North Arts and Entertainment District. It's in a district, in an area of town that has the Copycat Annex. There's the City Arts Building, which is a residential building that is limited or you know, focuses on people who are in the arts. There's Area 405. There's, you know, you're in an artsy part of town. BARCO, which is the overarching organization that is developing OpenWorks. They're also to this wonderful building on North Avenue called the Motor House. What's the connection between folks, the maker community and the arts in particular?
Well, a couple things. First off, to Rashid's point, a number of the buildings you just mentioned, in addition, the Baltimore Design School are former manufacturing buildings. We're a stone's throw from the old Crown Cork and Seal, the old Lebo Brothers factory. The Oriole Shoe Company was right up the street from us. So there's a deep history going back to the 1890s in the Greenmount West neighborhood of manufacturing. We're just in the southeastern corner of the Arts District, which gives some certain tax benefits to people growing small enterprises within our building. And we truly believe we can be kind of a bridge over to some of the communities to the east, notably Johnson Square and Oliver, which haven't seen the same kind of development that's bubbling up around the central part of North Avenue, to help kind of extend that growth eastward, see some rejuvenation of housing and education and economic development in those neighborhoods as well.
Why does it matter, do you think, that there is a tradition, as Rashid alluded to, of, say, textile manufacturing? Why does it matter that in the 1890s there was the Crown Cork and Seal factory? How does that history actually pertain and inform what we're doing now in 2016?
Well, I've had a couple folks that live in Greenmount West that have come through in some of our open houses, still in living memory, know that Lebo Brothers was making clothes as recently as the early 80s in what is now the Design School. Area 405 was a Venetian blind factory into the 70s or 80s. So that living memory and history is still embedded in a lot of the folks that live in these neighborhoods. And I love to tap back into that and grow it in a new way.
Yeah, and Andy, before we take a break, I mean, does reviving manufacturing mean turning back the clock? I mean,
not at all. I mean, I would just to that point real quick, it was no accident that Baltimore was a hub of manufacturing when it was, you know, 100 years ago. We're still located next to the port.
We're on the water.
We're on the water. We have great access to the East Coast corridor of rail and highways. So we still have a lot of the sort of physical attributes that make us a good place for that. And no, it's really not about turning back the clock. If you look at the number of manufacturing businesses in the city, while the total number has been falling, a subsection of that, advanced manufacturers, small companies doing advanced manufacturing, has been growing by leaps and bounds in the last 10 years. So what we're seeing is a lot more companies starting up with advanced manufacturing technologies like laser cutting and 3D printing and that sort of thing.
All right, we're going to take a little break. That's Andy Cook. He's the founder of the Made in Baltimore campaign. Rashid Aziz is here as well. He started the citywide youth entrepreneurship program. And Will Holman is here. He's the general manager of OpenWorks, the makerspace that just opened in Baltimore last month. You can join the conversation. Give us your thoughts about manufacturing and the arts and artisan crafts and making stuff. You can give us a call at 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or drop us a tweet at midday, Tom Hall. We'll be back in a flash. Stick with us.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up later in today's program, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will be here with a review of the new show at the Iron Crow Theater. And looking ahead on Midday tomorrow, our movie mavens, Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post, will join me with tips about what to see this weekend in local theaters. By the way, coming up Monday, we'll have a recap and analysis of the second presidential debate. And Tuesday, DeRay McKesson and longtime civil rights activist Ralph Moore will be here to talk about the lineage between the civil rights movement of the 1960s and the Black Lives Matter movement. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about the future of manufacturing in Baltimore. Will Holman is a furniture maker. He's the general manager of OpenWorks, the new makerspace that opened recently in Station North. He's also the author of a book called Guerrilla Furniture Design, How to Build Lean Modern Furniture with Salvaged Materials. Will, you need to check out my basement. You really do. I have a big basement. I live in Reservoir Hill, and I got a lot of room in my house, and all my friends who live in, like, Federal Hill and, you know, Fells Point stuff with small basements, they store their stuff in my house.
I'll come clean you out.
Maybe I'll just say, yep, you know, Will's coming over, and if you don't get your stuff out of my basement, it's going to end up being a couch. All right, Andy Cook is here as well. He's the founder of the Made in Baltimore campaign. That's an initiative of the Baltimore City Planning Department's Office of Sustainability. They'll be launching a study tomorrow on the state of manufacturing in Baltimore, and Charm City will be a case study in that national report. Rashid Aziz is the founder of the Citywide Youth Entrepreneurship Program. He works with kids to teach them how to become makers and business people, kids and super kids, kids who are a little bit older than kids, I guess, yeah, right, Rashid? You can join the conversation. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. Drop me a tweet, at Midday Tom Hall, or drop us an email, midday@wipr.org. So there's this huge, Andy, there's this huge freelance contingent in the labor force in America. Folks who are not working for a company, they're working for themselves. Are the kind of folks who are renting space at OpenWorks, the kind of folks who are getting training in Rashid's program, the freelancers who've just graduated from MICA and are sticking around to make Baltimore their home, are they enough, do you think, to revive and to create a critical mass for manufacturing in our city?
That's certainly our hope. Part of this study is going to be about trying to figure out, like, how many people we're talking about here. We still don't really have a good number of how many people are making a living at this. I have to say, you know, news at 11 on that one. Once we've completed the study, we'll have a better sense. I mean, I think that, you know, we can look at some of the examples of companies that have started up in Baltimore in recent years and seen their growth. And I think there's a lot of hope in there. You mentioned, for instance, Union Craft Brewing started with 3 guys about 6 years ago, and they're now up to 22 employees. So I think that, you know, and a lot of what's driving their business is kind of a sense of local identity. People are realizing, I think, and this is a trend nationally, that there is value in having a local and regional identity. That people are buying kind of with those values in mind, about sourcing locally, about kind of reducing their carbon footprint and supporting jobs in their communities. So I think that the trend is upward.
Mm-hmm. And Rashid, with the young people you're working with, I mean, there are particular advantages to manufacturers for locating in the city, aren't there? I mean, as opposed to, out in, you know, Harford County or Anne Arundel County?
Of course. You have transportation and you have, you know, direct access to those that, you know, need the jobs. You have a pool of individuals that are very creative and that a lot of them are hungry for opportunity. So there are, you know, great opportunities or advantages for, you know, producing and manufacturing in the inner city.
And Will Holman, tell us how the folks who are renting space and doing work at OpenWorks are reflective, representative of this freelance culture. I mean, you got folks who maybe come to that enterprise as artists, but they're not just working 100% as artists. They're doing other things, right?
Sure. I think that there's kind of two sets of examples here. First off, we have 140 of these small studio spaces. They're just 50 square feet. We've rented out about 15 or 20 of them so far. And a couple examples of folks making stuff in there are, we have a sculptor, we have a guitar maker, we have a small 3D printing company, we have a small nonprofit that's a veteran service organization, we have someone doing research on the maker movement. So it's kind of a broad spectrum of people that are interested in being in that creative community. Alongside that, we have a lot of part-time workers that are our shop techs and our front desk folks and our teachers. And they are all working on a contract basis, sharing their skills, expertise, and knowledge, maybe having another artistic or small manufacturing enterprise on the side, working for another shop and knitting it all together.
So a couple of weeks ago, a guy named Mike Rowe was on the show. And Mike is the host of a show that used to be on Discovery Channel called Dirty Jobs. And then he had another show on CNN, which is going to migrate to some other channel called Somebody's Got to Do It. And he started this foundation called Mike Rowe Works. And Andy, he talked about trying to connect people with certain skills with the jobs as they exist. He mentioned welding, for example, as an area in which there are all sorts of employers wishing they had people they could hire and not having a pool of people who know how to weld, who can fill those jobs. Plumbers, for example. That's an issue, isn't it? I mean, when we talk about the disadvantages of locating in a city, I mean, what do manufacturers look at? I mean, part of it is there's a pool of people, but that pool of people may not be skilled at what these folks need.
Some recent data about employment in the manufacturing sector in the city tells us that of everyone employed in manufacturing in Baltimore City right now, only about 25% of them are city residents. The rest, the vast majority, live outside of the city. And that's something that, you know, our campaign wants to address. We want to change that. And a lot of that has to do with training, not just training the employees, but also training the employers about how they can work with organizations that are, you know, training people that could be their potential employees, how they can sort of remove barriers to employment. And it touches so many things. I think, as Rashid mentioned before, transit is a big one. Your commute time to work makes a big difference in, you know, whether or not you'll be able to get a job. So we're trying to look at this holistically and really focus on the training and education components around this sector.
Mm-hmm. And Rashid, the kinds of training that you're doing with the young people with whom you work, it's not just the skill itself of making the dress or making the shirt, right? It's the whole sort of holistic approach to how to get a job and how to, you know, be an employee, right?
Yes, it's, you know, entrepreneurship education is really the focal point of what we do. That's why it's the first stop in our program. That focuses on three areas. Entrepreneurship education is the first to really get them to think creatively, think outside the box, you know. So our program is more about wraparound services, like what we're saying, one of the components of why we don't have these skilled plumbers, electricians, welders, is because of the education component. When they took those vocational skills away and those schools closed that were so integral to preparing people to enter the workforce, they aren't there anymore. So what these gentlemen are revitalizing helps bring those industries back and at least introduces you to them, which is awesome.
Rashid Aziz, Andy Cook, and Will Holman join me in the studio. It's midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. You can join us. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wypr.org, or a tweet, @MiddayTomHall is our handle. Will, one of the things Mike talked about, and I was struck by this, is the kind of stigma, if you will, attached to people who work with their hands. I mean, there's this notion, this came up in the presidential race a couple of cycles ago. The dignity of work often doesn't include those jobs that are in a factory or in a maker's space. And it turns out that it's something like 28% of the people in the city of Baltimore, and this reflects what happens nationally, hold a college degree. Most people, more people than not, attend college. College is not the only way to make a living, is it?
Right. I could talk about this for a long time, but I'll try to focus it down again through my own experience. I got a 5-year professional degree in architecture, and I've never worked as an architect other than as a summer intern when I was in college. I graduated right into a Great Recession that was predicated on the collapse of a construction and architecture industry. Could not find a job. I worked in construction. I worked in teaching. I worked in making my own artisanal crafts and selling them. And that's as creative and, you know, intellectually difficult as anything I've ever attempted. And to put this stigma on it or call it blue collar work or look down on it is ridiculous, because I bet you could take a lot of middle managers and folks working in quote unquote intellectual industries and put them in front of a broken down car or put them in front of a pile of lumber and they'd have no idea what to do.
So. I certainly count myself among those. 410-662-8780 is the number to join us here on Midday. Andy, Governor Hogan proposed tax breaks for manufacturers that move to Baltimore. That legislation is stalled as we speak. They did pass in the last legislative session at the state level a subsidy to Northrop Grumman to make sure that they stayed here and didn't go. And governor and the legislature seemed to think that if they hadn't passed that, Northrop Grumman would have given serious consideration to taking off. What kind of state, your office is out of the city office of sustainability. What kind of state and local funding is there available at the moment? Obviously, we have the TIF for Port Covington. That's a big example, but that's not the only one.
Sure. There are tax incentives available for companies here in the city. The Baltimore Development Corporation manages a few tax incentive overlay districts that businesses can apply for. One of the sort of dreams of the Made in Baltimore campaign would be to perhaps eventually create something like a Station North Arts and Entertainment District for makers and small manufacturers.
So that would be a particular geographical location that had tax incentives for putting your business there and living there. And
it is just an idea right now, but that's one of the ideas that we're kicking around. I think that one of the things that we're focused on is less the incentives to large corporations to stay here, but rather building from the ground up the small businesses that are going to want to stay here because it's their home, because they identify with it.
John joins us from Baltimore. John, welcome to Midday. Glad you called.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How you feel?
So I'm 50 years old. And so I grew up, you know, in the 60s and 70s. My dad was an electrician. My mom was a teacher. And I, like so many other people, bought into the, you got to get a college degree. You got to get a college degree. You don't want to work with your hands, et cetera. Well, it turns out that's what I did. I have a PhD. I wanted to become a college professor. Got bored out of my skull doing that and went back to being an electrician, which is something I was doing since I was 12 years old, you know, working weekends and things like that with the family. And my current profession, I am a electrical instructor at a community college locally here, Montgomery College in Rockville. So I wanted to, I guess not attack, but respond to the college is not for everybody comment. We're still buying into this idea that college is a 4-year degree. There's a lot of different kinds of colleges with a lot of different kinds of resources for all kinds of people. And community colleges are probably one of the most underused resources when it comes to vocational training or vocational skills that we see. I see people every day that still tell me, I had no idea you taught this stuff. And we teach all kinds of hands-on skills, construction skills, welding skills. And this is happening all over the country. So I want to say college is for everybody, but there isn't just one kind of collagen anymore.
Sure. Well, Dr. John, thank you for your call. And Rashid, this program at Baltimore City Community College, did it pre-exist before your organization, or did you sort of nudge them to make it exist?
Well, no. They already had a certificate program for fashion design, but it wasn't really focused on industrial manufacturing. So we kind of tweaked the program a little so that they can learn more industry prepared, so that they can work on the different type of industrial sewing machines, industrial techniques, industrial cutting techniques, et cetera, that their program previously didn't focus on. So it previously existed, to answer your question, but what we did is tweak it a little.
You know, a lot of folks in the presidential campaign, the issue of manufacturing and revising manufacturing on a national level has come up. Hillary Clinton has a long section of her website in which she, you know, identifies six or seven things that she's suggesting: a $10 billion investment in partnerships that connect labor and business. And then she talks about trade, countries like China. She talks about revitalizing particular manufacturing communities. Maybe Baltimore would be one of those. Mr. Trump doesn't talk specifically about manufacturing, but talks a lot about the trade agreements. He's against NAFTA. He's against TPP. But there are a lot of folks who say that none of that matters, that the real problem with manufacturing is automation. So, the folks who are working at OpenWorks obviously are not automating the work that they're doing. The clothes that the folks working with Rashid are making are not automated on this mass scale. The fact that it's made by an individual with an actual pair of hands, is that's going to be a point of sale? Do you think that's going to be enough to kick it forward?
Well, I think what's interesting about our space, we offer a spectrum of tools, both from traditional to advanced manufacturing, CNC, laser cutting, and 3D printing. And 3D printers and CNC lathes and laser cutters all need operators. And to the caller, John's point, we've developed a partnership with CCBC Catonsville, which has a two-year associate's degree in advanced manufacturing, and they're going to be offering some of their classes at OpenWorks as a satellite campus beginning in January. So training all these tool operators, and that plays into Andy's point about the growth of advanced manufacturing. There's a bunch of companies here, Blueprint Homes, which prefabricates apartment modules and housing, Potomac Photonics, which does laser micro manufacturing, Direct Dimensions, which does 3D scanning. All these companies are out there, they're growing, and they're looking for skilled operators to run their tools.
I would add not just operators, but also repair people. I visited a machine shop in Brooklyn that makes parts for the aerospace industry, and when I visited, there were as many people fixing the machines there as there were operating the machines. And that's, I think, a big thing that is a big opportunity in the training field as well.
Yeah, if you're an aerospace designer, you can't call, you know, the BGE home to come out and fix your machines. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Rashid, there's a big movement also to attract tech folks here in Baltimore. There are incubating spaces for people doing tech. There's a big biotech movement here, both at Hopkins, at Maryland, and at other academic institutions. Are there tie-ins between the tech and biotech industries and the manufacturing industries? Are there commonalities and places where it's intersecting?
Well, well, of course they are. Say, for instance, to build electronic products, you know, of course, apps, to build phones, tablets, you know, that's one place where they integrate, or an area that I'm familiar with. Actually, you know, here in the city of Baltimore, those were the first incubators that were getting financing and funding to, you know, transform the economy through the tech industry. And, you know, hey, my son is 4 years old, and he understands pretty much more about technology than I do. You know, so they're really, you know, hardwired, you know, this generation to be in tune with, you know, emerging technologies.
Yeah.
So now it's the point of, since those systems have been built in the city, to plug, you know, these individuals into those corridors so they can benefit from it.
Yeah, all right. Well, you guys are doing great stuff, and I appreciate everybody coming by. Thanks so much. Will Holman is a furniture maker and the general manager of OpenWorks. We've got a link to more on OpenWorks on the Midday webpage. Andy Cook is the founder of Made in Baltimore, an initiative of the Baltimore City Planning Department's Office of Sustainability. Rashid Aziz is the founder of the Citywide Youth Entrepreneurship Program. By the way, they've got a cleanup and flea market happening Saturday morning in the 2100 block of North Avenue. Proceeds from that event will benefit the Building Fund for Entrepreneurs Making and Growing Enterprises, EMGE. Come to WIPR.org/midday to learn how you can get involved. Coming up after a quick break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick is here with her weekly review. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.